This is Chris Reich, producer of the Soundbites podcasts. Due to human errors in the production of this podcast, a short portion of the show for December 16, 2007 is lost. That portion is approximately 90 seconds of the beginning of the original broadcast. We join this podcast of the original broadcast already in progress.
Brothers will initiate an orderly wind down of each of the stores, the company says. That's great news for consumers looking for bargains. CompUSA will remain open through the holiday season, presumably with everything must go style signs. It was clear all was not well with the retailer when in March it closed half its stores due to pressure from bigger chains like Best Buy and Circuit City. So
why buy something and then close it?
Well, we don't know what the terms of the deal are, but they clearly got something they wanted, and in return...
Maybe they're going to open up some other style store?
They may have wanted a piece of it, like the tech guys. You know, and then but they bought the whole thing in order to get that piece.
Or they may want the web store.
They might want the web store, absolutely. Turn it into the new egg. New egg. Before we get too far along, please remember to join us in the Soundbites chat room. We are on IRC in EFNet.
Yeah, you changed that, so...
I changed the front...
which I can't get into.
Well, if you look at the... hello? Why are you on the wrong page there?
They're blocking me here.
They're blocking you?
Yeah.
Why would they be doing that?
WAM, because...
Oh, WAM is doing the blocking?
Proxy server for forums or something like that? I run into that in corporate accounts, too. And it really hurts my business, because a lot of times I need to check on forums and company support sites to fix the problem I'm at that company to fix.
Right.
And when I can't get to an Adobe forum, or I can't get to some other forum because it's it's not part of the corporate structure, it hurts.
You can't be Dave. That's the problem. Read the error message.
But see here, looking up the hose, could not.
No, that doesn't matter. What they're saying is the nickname Dave is already set.
I gotta go back.
The nickname Dave is already set. We're just helping Dave figure out the IRC. You can either get online. Dave E has joined Soundbite, you see. You can either join by putting some username and clicking the login button on the Soundbite's website. Check out the Soundbite's website. Look what I did. I'm very impressed with myself. Alternately, you can download your own IRC client. There is some limit to the number of people who can log in through the login thing that I've put up there. But in terms of your own IRC client, you can have thousands of people in the chat. So you can do whatever you want there. We're all set. It looks like everybody's in and ready to go there. But CompUSA, that kind of shocks me. I think that...
And we were talking before the show, that's the last major computer retailer.
Right, they aren't pure computer toward the end, but they started out as a pure computer retailer. I mean, we still have Circuit City, and we still have Best Buy, places like that, but for
electronic
them,
stores that also sell computers.
Right.
Well, back in the old days, we used to have these shops that catered to hobbyists. Computing used to be a hobbyist type of activity. It's no longer hobbyist. It's mainstream. So I think that's what's happening in the retail market as well. We're going to see computers at other types of stores.
Right. Right. I think you're absolutely right.
But the problem there is it can hurt the consumer, because you go into an electronics store and then they may not know enough about computers. And we've joked about this in the past. They sell you whatever the best spiff is, not the best computer for your needs.
Right.
So for local businesses and locally owned computer specialty shops or hobbyist stores these days even, it's probably going to be a boon, because you're going to get better service and better support and better customer service at a locally owned store anyway.
Right. Well, we'll see. It's going to be an awfully interesting...
Feel sorry for the people that are going to lose their jobs, though.
Well, that's the big thing right there. All right, our first caller is Dave from Webster, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
My question is, I had a computer that was hung. I downloaded some files to another machine, did a high-level format, deleted partitions, and reloaded Windows, brought the files back, and realized that all of some photo files were not sent when I moved the information over to the second machine. And I'm wondering, is there a way to recover those files on the machine that was reformatted?
There are unformatting programs, but it's really hit and miss whether you'll be able to get anything back. It depends if anything was written over top of it. If it was just reformatted, then you can probably unformat it. But if you reformatted it and wrote other stuff on top of it, then it's most likely gone.
If it rewrote over the same area.
Right. And that's generally what happens. And when you write to the new drive again, it starts writing on top of the data that was there, so you can't undelete it anymore.
Right.
Is it worth taking a chance and at least attempting to do that? And what
it can't... Well, at this point, it can't hurt.
Well, you're going to have to buy a program to unformat.
Yes, and do you have a recommendation?
Unformat program?
Unformat. Well, there used to be one as part of Norton Utilities, but I don't know if they have it anymore. There are commercial data recovery services that can probably do it, but you're looking at several thousand dollars.
Yes, I'm not looking. That's definitely not an option.
Yeah, because once you format it, that's...
Yeah, it's really...
The problem is I can give you the names of several, but I have never used them. Now, one is from PCTools.com. That's probably acceptable one. There's
a couple of them
File Recover.
A couple of them I've seen will let you download it and scan your hard drive for free, and if it finds files to undelete, then you pay for it.
Right.
So if that works, then you're not out much money.
But check out File Recover from PC Tools.
I'll have a link.
We got to take a quick break. Back in a couple of seconds with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you 15 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 19 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Hey, here's a story of yet another semantic screw-up. A routine update from Semantic Security Response wreaked havoc on a California company's clientele this week when it inadvertently tagged a program produced by Solid Oak Software as a virus and cut off the internet access of Solid Oak customers. Symantec on Monday released a virus definition update that incorrectly identified Solid Oak's CyberSitter filtering program as a virus. Depending on the version of Symantec's Norton antivirus product that Solid Oak customers were running, CyberSitter files were either deleted or banned from use by Norton, according to Solid Oak. On Friday, a Symantec spokesman said that the company had issued a fix. Before that, however, Solid Oak customers, including schools, libraries, and personal accounts, were not provided with the recovery mechanisms and subsequently lost internet access. See, what CyberSitter does is filters all your internet stuff to make sure you don't go to bad places. It's a proxy server. Well, if you deny access to the proxy server, you don't get to the internet. Customers had to reinstall entire operating systems and software. Symantec made contact with Solid Oak on Wednesday. Remember, the download was Monday. And under pressure from Solid Oak, set up a technical support number for customers to call. That number, however, is not really in service. Now, this is the third time in less than a year that Symantec's Norton products have caused severe damage to computers running CyberSitter software offerings, according to the president of Solid Oak Software. In my opinion, he says Norton's products are worse than any virus I can think of. A Symantec spokeswoman on Thursday said the company was researching the problem. On Friday, they issued the following statement. On December 5th, Symantec moved the detection of an application called CyberSitter from trackware into a new category called parental controls. Both categories are security risks, and Symantec provides its customers with the option of allowing the technology to function as intended or blocking it during the category switch. Behavioral technology and Symantec products detected CyberSitter as bloodhound dot unknown and restricted internet access. Yeah, restricted it down to nothing.
Well, see, that's the tough situation in defining a virus or malware. This program watches everything you do on the internet and prevents you from going places. That sounds like a malware or a virus.
Yeah, right. Symantec also said it depended on the customer to determine what actions to take. Just one more reason I am not a fan of Symantec or the Norton products.
I have found in the shop in the past couple of months that folks will bring machines in, they'll say, oh, they're running slower. And sure enough, I look at the systems and they're running the Norton Security Suite. I uninstall that, put on the AVG and the other Tango products, and the thing speeds up instantly.
Norton has said it in a few places that I've read. They know there's an issue with Norton hogging down the system, and some of that is the way it has to work, but they've claimed in their 2008 version that it's less intrusive. But it's still too much, but it's less than it was.
Yeah, it's less bad, but it's still bad, All right, our next caller is Fred from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Fred. What's your question?
My question, guys, is I have some old photo slides from 30, 40 years ago. I'm wondering if there is equipment available that I could take them and put them on a CD.
Yeah, virtually
any scanner that you can buy will let you scan them into your computer.
No, there's commercial services, too. Slides, you've got a regular scanner, you've got to have backlighting.
Right, the basic $100 scanners will do a regular printed photo. Mm-hmm. And then you get about in the $150 mark, and they have a slide scanner where they will scan mounted slides. When you get up to about the $200 mark, you can get a flatbed with a second light source, and you can do larger format negatives and slides that have transparency.
But if you don't
you
have
a
lot
second
of them,
light source.
Yeah, but if you don't have a lot of them to do, you can go over, and I know they advertise on this show, is Rowe Photo.
Yeah, there's commercial sources that will do it for you.
You know, instead of the best equipment to get is a product called CoolScan by Nikkor.
Right, the Nikon CoolScan is a dedicated slide scanner. It's going to cost about $1,000.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to.
And you get, well, see, part of the problem is the resolution on a slide is about 4,000 lines per inch.
And like you were saying, though, as far as a scanner, though, you've got to have the adapter that sits up on top of the scanner that flushes the light through the slide so that it can...
We have very good luck with the Epson 4490. It has a second light source, and we'll do medium format and large format transparencies. I'm trying to look up the price now. I think it was about $350.
Okay, you mentioned one for $150. What would that be?
Well, that would only work for mounted slides or unmounted slide negatives. If your transparency options are larger than that, it may not work.
Yeah, well, these are just regular...
What you need to do is either go online or head over to CompUSA if the sale has started and look for a slide scanner.
Actually, the 4490 is down to $200.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. So
that will
be
35mm and medium format.
Uh-huh. Okay, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, for the $100, $150 range, the Epson has the V350 we've also had a very good look at. It basically has a slot in the top of it that you slide your negative strip into.
All right.
Which is okay if you have strips of negatives. If you're doing mounted slides, it's one at a time.
Yeah.
So it depends on how many you have.
Right.
With something like the 4490 that has the full bed transparency, you can lay down a whole bunch of slides at once and scan them all in one shot.
Right.
Nikon also has options that will allow you to stack your slides, and it'll feed them automatically if you have a whole lot of it's worth it.
But then you're talking a big price tag. If you only got a few, it's like...
So you're looking at $1,000 for a dedicated auto-feeder slide scan. Even if commercial service is $5 a slide, you know, if you only have 10 or 20...
Yeah, you've got to weigh out and your time, you know, and then trying to clear it up and everything else. Whereas if you take it over to professional services, they've got the tools to auto-adjust and everything else.
All right, our next caller is James from Greece, New York. Welcome, James. What's your question?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm currently in the market for buying a new computer, and I just wanted to get a sense of direction as to which way to go with whether to get a PC or an Apple. I'm kind of getting turned off by the snobbish, cocky advertisements that you see on the commercial by Apple, but I don't want that to ultimately, you know, deter me from buying an Apple. I just want to make a really good choice.
Right. Well, there's four of us.
Yeah, but the biggest thing...
So you'll get at least five responses.
No matter what we always say... Mm-hmm. What are you going to use it for, and who's going to be your support?
Okay. Basically, we use it for just internet. Definitely probably do a little gaming on there. Some graphics stuff with like Adobe Photoshop. And then, too, I wouldn't shy away from upgrading the computer later on down the line if I needed a bigger hard drive or wanted to add RAM.
Who are you going to turn to when you need the system fixed? Will that person know more about Apple or about Windows?
I probably would attempt to fix it myself.
Right. And then the store you buy it from, that's a big decision when you're looking at where to buy, is what their after-sale support gives you as well.
Okay.
But things you mentioned, especially in the graphics arena, that's typically where the Mac has excelled. There's a lot of advantage with internet surfing on the Mac because there aren't as many spyware and malware programs and viruses, so you don't have to worry as much about that. You still do, but it's not the huge issue it is under Windows. The one thing where Windows does have an advantage is in gaming. We tend to say that there's more games on the Windows side, but there's better games on the Mac side. We let the Windows people weed out all the bad games, so only the best ones get ported over to the Mac. But if you're interested in gaming, then a game console will give you the best game performance anyway.
Right. They're both good all the way around, so I don't see that either one would do you wrong.
Yeah, you just got to do your homework. You know, like we said, how comfortable you're going to feel. And if you're going to do the work yourself, that's going to be an issue with the Mac. Because a lot of it, you know, you've got to take in for service because, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, though, but pulling that apart, that voids the warranty and everything else on a Mac if you open
it?
No, they can?
Yeah, they can open it up. It's almost the same on a PC. If you open your PC and break something, that'll void the warranty. If you open your PC and don't break something, they won't know.
Okay. I thought, too, that like the iMac was more of a... I mean, I know they have different models, like the G5, they have the iMac. But I thought the iMac series was more proprietary, where you can't really go in and upgrade it. Is that true?
It depends on what you want to upgrade. You can easily upgrade the RAM. You can upgrade the hard drive, the processor.
Replace the hard drive. You can't add a hard drive.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And same thing with RAM. And the same thing on a PC. If you've used all your RAM slots, you can't upgrade. You have to remove what's there and put a bigger one in.
Yeah, but more of the desktops, though, are coming with like four slots.
Yeah.
When you start putting in, say you got a dual core, 2 1-gig sticks, you usually have two more slots to add two more 1-gig
sticks.
Yeah,
the iMac only has two slots, so you'd put 2 2s in there to go to 4 gigs maximum.
And again, this is the average, you got to do your homework.
The average home person may not need more than 2 gigs with 2 1.
This year.
This year, yeah. But one of the issues with the Macintosh is that You can do a lot of your expansion externally. You can easily add external hard drives, so you don't have to get in the case. You can if you want to, but you don't have to get into it.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 30 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Okay, I heartily admit I have no idea what you're about to play. Welcome back. What?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, now I get it. I didn't get the first. I'm not one of those named that too. Oh, here we are. He's getting down. He's getting funky. He's getting up. He's taking a shower.
Tell me, who is this?
Don't ask me. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton. It's cool in the game.
Yeah, they're coming to town in the
exactly.
next couple of weeks. Menheim Steamroller, you played earlier. They're coming next spring.
Are you playing that in celebration of my birthday?
Yeah.
The names are all missing
for me. That's my fault because I was trying to get back into the chat.
All right. Well, Microsoft will put out 7 security bulletins on Patch Tuesday with 3 critical updates that could lead to systems getting hijacked via Windows, Internet Explorer, and or Microsoft's multimedia frameworks and APIs. Vista is vulnerable to all 3 of the critical flaws, although Microsoft noted in a table of affected software included with its monthly advanced notification that updates are currently available. One of the critical bulletins affects Windows, DirectX, and Direct Show. It looks like this month it's almost all about multimedia. DirectX, Direct Show show up in every one of these flaws. Windows Media Player, Internet Explorer, Windows itself, it's all there. So make sure you do your updates this month. It looks like these things are pretty high profile. If you're the sort of person who, gets on the web and ends up on a site that might have an ad that has video in it, or you randomly click on emails that you get that say, watch this video, you are very vulnerable, and you best make sure you get yourself patched. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jay from Batavia. Welcome, Jay. What's your question?
I've got a wireless system at home, and I keep getting booted off on a daily basis. I have to reboot everything, and then I guess it reassess my IP addresses and such, but it just seems like I'm constantly getting booted off. I've got a Linksys system, and I have Roadrunner, and not sure exactly what keeps happening.
If when you get kicked off, you were to plug one of your machines directly into the Roadrunner modem, do you get online okay?
Yeah.
And stay on?
How old is your Linksys router?
I just bought a new wireless G with a speed boost. And I've also got a wireless G expander on there as well.
Do your systems have G in them?
Yes.
Okay.
You might want to check for a firmware update in the router. That has been an issue with some routers where
it stops
working. But
I've also seen Roadrunner, though, they've had a batch of
bad cable routers, too.
Routers that were booting people off. Remember just last month we were getting a rash of it? And just a couple of weeks ago, it turned out a couple of my clients were saying that, they came out and replaced it because
You may need to plug one of your computers directly into the cable router and leave it there for a few days and see if the same thing happens to it.
Right. If not, the next thing I would wonder is, do you have wireless phones?
Yeah, if you're using...
And are they running at the same frequency?
Right. A lot of the cordless phones use the 2.4 gigahertz band and will interrupt your computer Wi-Fi signals. Microwave ovens run in the 2.4 gigahertz band. When you're looking at portable phones, you want to get either a 900 megahertz or a 5.8 gigahertz so it doesn't interfere with your phone on your computer. There are channels you can change in the phone and in the router. In fact, that's something, too. If your neighbors have Wi-Fi, the default channel on every Wi-Fi router is 6.
Yep.
So if the neighbor has Wi-Fi, he's also on channel 6. It interrupts your channel 6.
Yep.
You can go into your Wi-Fi setup and pick a different channel and see if that works any better as well.
I'm thinking it may be the cable modem because I had it directly wired into my main computer. And then I kept getting booted off. So then I went and bought a new wireless G router.
Yeah, you're right. That won't change anything. Have them replace your remote. Call them and tell them what's happening. Tell them you are directly connected into it. Don't tell them you've got a router.
Yep.
And they'll come out and change it for you.
Okay.
Good luck.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
Or quite often they can take it in and have it replaced if they do it over the counter.
Right. You can just bring it right in.
Yeah, that's fast.
They're very, very good about that. Yep. Tom in Rochester is our next caller. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hey, guys. It's nice chatting with you.
Thanks.
I love your program.
Thank you.
Got a question, of course. I'm looking to upgrade my system. I've got an 800 hertz PC right now and sadly needs to be upgraded. And I'm online and I'm checking out these systems that are reconditioned from some of the major computer manufacturers, Gateway. I don't know if I can mention them.
You can.
Gateway and Dell have got them out there, and they're really attractive prices on those. Is that something I should be worried about?
The big issue with refurbished or reconditioned machines is why are they refurbished? Was it a sale that the computer didn't work and they tried to fix it and returned it? Was it a trade show machine that might have been beat up at a trade show? It's kind of like buying a rental car. Yeah, the price is great, but I've driven rental cars. I know how people.
I wouldn't buy a car that I drove that way.
Yeah. So it's if you like to tinker and can fix your own computer, then you can save some money on it. But if you want it to work and keep working, it's not as an attractive.
There's also the question of warranty.
Yep.
If it only comes with a 90-day warranty, walk away fast.
Okay.
Yeah, because, the devices in it, are they the latest and greatest and the cutting edge? Maybe it's just a DVD player versus a DVD burner?
Yeah, the one I'm looking at is 2.8 hertz dual core with 1 gig of RAM.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a DVD writer, mm-hmm. plus or minus.
Sounds like it's a trade show.
Yeah, it looks like it's pretty well outfitted.
Yeah, it sounds like it might have been in a trade show or something like that.
Or maybe a company just upgraded to the 3.0 models and turned in all their 2.8s.
Right.
You can buy an extended warranty for like $25, gives you an extra year. But it does only come with a 90-day factory warranty.
A one-year warranty will help you some.
Yeah.
But refurb computers are nice, but I would not expect to own it for 3, 4, 5 years.
Who knows how old it already is? If it's already a 2 or 3 year old computer, then you're pushing the length of the components anyway.
And what conditions was it under? Was it in some room? Use and abuse.
True. Good point.
Yeah.
I, in a previous life, used to refurbish electronics equipment. And one of the things that I like about it is that, this thing had something wrong with it at one point. It was probably sold to someone, and something went wrong. Stuff happens. It's electronics. Things break. It'll go back on a tech's bench. He will repair the problem and then check every other thing out. This thing has been thoroughly tested, at least at the place where I used to work.
That's what happened to new computers.
A lot of times the manufacturer will have, it'll be current product. How do I want to say this? It's currently being sold in the retail market, and there's also some of them available refurbished. And if they have the standard warranty on them, I have no trouble buying refurbished equipment and have done so recently.
Right, as long as it's got the good warranty on it.
Exactly.
That's really what counts. All right, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enreich, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enreich.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. In the chat room, Alpha Rapt, which I believe is the first 9 letters of Alpha Raptor, says that he's got a flat Canon company. Canon makes a line of scanners for less than $100 that do slides. So there you go. I suspect they're wanted at times, but it certainly is inexpensive enough to go with for that sort of thing. Microsoft has issued a Vista XP Service Pack blockers. Now, pay attention to this. Microsoft posted a tool yesterday that will block automatic installations of several upcoming service packs, including Vista Service Pack 1 and Windows XP Service Pack 3. The Windows Service Pack Blocker Toolkit blocking tools, that's a Microsoft name, all right, are designed for businesses, particularly large corporations or organizations that require extensive testing before they deploy a service pack or operating system upgrade. The download includes 3 versions of the tools, an executable, a script, and a group policy template that prevents the service packs from reaching PCs via Windows Update, which is Microsoft's default Windows service. The tool blocks Windows Vista Service Pack 1, Windows XP Service Pack 3, and Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 2 for varying lengths of time. The Vista and XP Service Packs can be blocked for as long as 12 months, while the Server 2003 blocker bars downloads only through March of 2008. Vista Service Pack 1, which enters public testing on Tuesday, is scheduled to wrap up in the first quarter of 2008. Windows XP Service Pack 3, on the other hand, has a delivery date of sometime in the first half of next year. Microsoft also plans to unveil Office 2007 Service Pack 1 next week, but it said nothing about a blocker for the suite update. Microsoft has written a program that blocks their own updates. Let me repeat that. Microsoft has written a program that blocks their own updates. All righty then. Moving on.
It's probably for corporate people who don't want updates loaded on individual machines until they load it on their machine.
Right, and that is true. We have that problem at the Saunders College of Business at RIT.
Yeah, but you can control that.
Well, you can't. That's the problem. Now you will be able to. You couldn't before.
You couldn't block that?
No, you could not block the updates. You could block them individually if you went to every machine, but you couldn't block them. Like, from my desk, I can do all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
I could not do that. So they would get the updates unless I went to each machine individually and said, don't give me this update, when it went to come down. But logistically, you're just not going to hit everybody.
This must be in response to the issue a couple of weeks ago when the updates were coming in that were not wanted.
Yes. Yes, that is generally correct, yes.
Like IE7?
Exactly. Well, that's not quite the same, but yes. All right, our next caller is John from Ontario, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
I was just wondering if you had any opinion on Zone Alarm's new product, the Force Field, that apparently creates a virtual you on the Internet to protect you from keyloggers and anybody else getting into your system.
I have not yet had a chance to play with it. It's supposed to be pretty great, but I haven't had a chance to play with it yet.
Okay. I was considering downloading the beta, but I thought, well, let me get an opinion first.
Right. Yeah, it is only a beta, so yeah, I would not put it on a production machine.
Okay.
Yeah, because like anything else, it's labeled beta, and people get upset and bent out of shape and everything else, and they sit there, crashes their machine, and they haven't done a backup. Well, I was using this beta. Well, beta will do that. That's okay.
Beta doesn't mean free. Beta means it's going to break.
Right. I need everybody listening to pay attention this moment. Those of you who have already gone to Zone Alarm looking to download Force Field because we recommended it, we did not recommend it. It will probably be a terrific product. Right now, it's something designed specifically to break your machine. Don't run it on your production box. Do not run. Are you listening?
Got it.
Thank you. Not just you, but a couple of other people I know who write down everything we say and then go do it, whether they need it or not. Do not download the beta unless you're willing to play with a beta.
Okay.
I would even say don't.
Right, just plain don't.
Because we'll get blamed for doing it. Until we tell you otherwise, don't use it.
Yeah.
All right.
But in your particular case, John, yeah, it's not really ready for prime time, so I would suggest you hold off.
Okay. Now, how much overhead is that going to put on your computer to make a virtual you on your computer?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Anybody running less than a 2 gigahertz machine is probably going to find a slowdown. All right, going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 49 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHM. We go. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 54 minutes after the hour, you're listening to all kinds of things, including sound bites on 1180 WHAM. Now, before we go to the most important part of the show, I got a couple of quick announcements for meetings. Apple Cider this week will be Wednesday, December 12th. Pam Weaver, Director of Community Education for the New York branch of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, presents the next March Internet Safety Program at 7 p.m. at East High School Forum Room, 1801 East Main Street at Culver. That's this Wednesday, December 12th at the CIDR meeting.
It's going to be a fairly generic presentation on Internet safety, so PC users are welcome to attend as well. Right. Linux, everybody.
December 11th at the Penfield Library is a Computer Jeopardy game with the Rochester Computer Society. President Arvad Kovacs presents a new series of computer-related questions, or actually answers, because it's Jeopardy. And on the 20th, I believe this is Lugor. Nobody told me what the name of the group was, but I'm going to pretend it's Lugor. December 20th, 7 p.m. at RIT in rooms 1400, building 70. Ross Brunson, channel partner, enablement engineer for Novell's SUSE business unit. He will be there talking about SUSE Linux and a couple of other things, so Open Office versus Microsoft Office and all that other cool stuff. So,
aren't you speaking at the Society of Technical Communicator something or others this week at RIT?
God, I hope not.
Someone showed me an invitation that said you were the guest speaker.
What? When?
Oh, they haven't told you yet.
No, but I believe that's a closed meeting. All right, kiddies, it's time to grab your footy jammies. Grab your mug of hot cocoa, sit in Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. We have the tasers ready after last week, so if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave.
You really want this?
Uncle Dave!
You really want this?
I don't know, do we?
All right. Usually I'm pretty calm about
this. Oh, well, define usually!
Define calm.
Well, it's all relative.
All right. For certain select values of calm.
Were you morons? Climb out from underneath the rocks.
Tell us how you really feel, Dave.
All you morons, come out from underneath
this
the rocks.
Corner.
All right, for all you folks that have been brainwashed by Bill Gates and the whole genre of Microsoft over the years and don't want to listen to us, IE is a piece of junk. And whenever you're going to wake up about it, you'll solve a lot of problems. I had this one client refuses to believe me. Because he's been told by tech support, especially those folks over in India, hey, they know better than what we're doing, that he had to use IE. And I go, why? Well, they said I had to. Why? I put on Foxfire. Did you have any problems with it? No. Then why? Well, they said I had to. No, you don't have to. IE will, for the most part, screw up your machine. That's the easiest way to put it. Because most of your hackers, folks that are writing Trojans and trying to take over machines, are writing this stuff towards Internet Explorer and Outlook Express. They've been doing it this year. They've been doing it for quite a few years, and it's just getting worse. That's why we say you can have as many different browsers on your machine that you want, and you can click on them and use them. You don't have to have just one. Granted, there are some government sites. I will grant the folks out there saying, well, you can't use everything for Foxfire. This is true. There are some government sites which haven't updated their programming, which is, again, sloppy programming on their part, to display in Foxfire. But IE will give you a lot of problems. And you can use other Explorer and browsers other than IE. So try Thunderbird, Firefox for Mozilla.
Right, all right. Grab him, boys! Grab him!
It's ridiculous! I mean, they've been brainwashed.
All right, that's enough. Everybody quietly back away slowly.
No.
Get your footy jammies off. Put your hot cocoa mugs in the dishwasher. And we've given him a sedative. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of Uncle Dave Unchained. You know, the story
hour... You want to get me going again?
No.
I hate you.
No.
Just giving a shot.
No. Story Hour with Uncle Dave used to be kind of fun and kind of interesting, but lately it's become kind of about to lose our license.
Look, people are forking me out. I mean, you try to steer
and it's
me
only going to get worse as Christmas approaches.
And you don't know, you're trying to steer them in the
all right,
right
we're
going to
take a quick break back
listen
in just a couple of minutes with some screaming maniac, Steve Ring, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, Nina Frances, when you 50 minutes after the hour, if we're all lucky, we'll be back on the other side of the news. Yeah, cut his mic off. News, weather, sports. All the stuff you really listen to Wham for. We'll be back on the other end with a whole lot more of the greatest computer show in the known universe. Am I talking now? And that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. I've completely lost track of how much time we have left till the end of the show. So I'll just keep quietly talking. Join us in the forums. Join us in the... No, thanks. I appreciate that. Bye-bye. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Well, every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about privacy concerns if Google were storing all your documents. 291 of you voted, making it, tying it for number 186 on the all-time hit list. Thanks to each and every one of you. The main vote, 75% of you said heck yes. 12% said not without proper precautions. 5% of you said with Google never. 4% said I'm not entirely clear on the concept. And 4% said I try not to think about those things. This week's poll comes off a news article I read. Those entering online dating forums risk having more than their hearts stolen. A program that can mimic online flirtation and then extract personal information from its unsuspecting conversation partners is making the rounds in chat forums, mostly in Russia right now, according to security software firm PC Tools. The artificial intelligence of Cyberlove, Mac Playmate, automated
Eliza.
It's essentially Eliza, absolutely. Automated chats is good enough. Your victims have a tough time distinguishing the bot from a real potential suitor. The software can work quickly, too, establishing up to 10 relationships in 30 minutes, according to PC Tools. It compiles a report on every person it meets, complete with name, contact information, and photos. As a tool that can be used by hackers to conduct identity fraud, CyberLover demonstrates an unprecedented level of social engineering. Among CyberLover's creepy features is its ability to offer a range of different profiles, from romantic lover to sexual predator. It can also lead victims
I've heard people say that...
There we go. Now we're talking.
Too much of anything is not good for you.
It can also lead victims to a personal website, which can be used to deliver malware. Although the program is currently targeting Russian websites, PC Tools is urging people in chat rooms and social networks elsewhere to be on the alert for such attacks. Their recommendations amount to just good sense in general, such as avoiding giving out personal information and using an alias when chatting online. The software company believes that CyberLover's creators plan to make it available worldwide in February. People are used to not opening attachments or maybe not clicking on a link that shows up in their IM, but this emulates a real conversation, so you're more likely to give more personal information, click on a link, or send your photograph. So this week's poll is, have you ever flirted with a stranger online? The choices are yes, no, only with Rob, no one's stranger than he, and how that, private is this poll?
And he's on the phone and didn't hear that, so you're going to have to go through the list again.
Will I have to go through the list again? Eventually I will, yes, but so far, we've got 94 votes, and no, as the liars are all leading with 63%, followed by 18% of yes, 13% how private is this poll, and only 6 people have said they've flirted online only with Rob, since no one is stranger than he. So please vote in the poll. And then when you're done voting in the poll...
He's like a bobblehead. His head's just going up and down.
That's right. And then when you're done voting in the poll, click on the Give Us Your Opinion link in the little yellow box underneath. It will take you to my website, Ask Nick. .com.
That's AskNick.com.
Where you can enter an opinion. So far, 8 people have done that, and you can do that too. Then check out what I do. It's I put out a newsletter 3 times a week. We have forums where you can search the old newsletters for information, ask questions, all that stuff. It's only $15 a year. I don't know how you can beat it. And then come on back to Soundbites and join us there. You'll notice right now I have on the main page of the Soundbites website, I have a link to join us in the chat room. I'll be fixing that up a little bit more this week. I've got links to IRC clients for Windows, the Mac, or Linux. I will also add, well, Chadzilla is actually already on those lists, so I don't really need to add it, but I'll be doing what I can to make that a little bit. I'll also add links to the webcam and to the stream, since people really apparently need to find those things. So I'll make sure that those things get added, and they'll only show up on Sundays from 11 to 1. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Victor, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Great show.
Thank you.
Still waiting for you guys to get a daily show, but
keep asking.
Yeah. I just want to start off by saying Norton, McAfee, and IE are all garbage.
Yeah. Thank
think,
you.
I think they're
Thank
all you. Garbage. I use the eTrust, the Internet Suite.
Oh, yeah.
Formerly CA.
Yep.
And I swear by them. They are great.
They're very good.
I downloaded a couple of viruses, and they shut me right off as soon as they figured out what they were. And,
yep.
You know. So, you guys were talking about the bots. I've actually conversated with one on Yahoo.
There you go.
Had no idea it was a bot until, you know, I asked it a question, and then it repeated like the former question that it asked. And yeah, they're very deceptive.
Yes, they are.
Now, I'm thinking about getting a PSP.
Sure.
For the boy. I was just wondering if you guys had any thoughts on them. I know that they are able to browse the web. Do you know what web browser it has in it? I'm assuming maybe an IE type of thing. Or
I believe it's Opera, actually.
Is it?
That's what I think.
Okay, have you guys heard good things or bad things about them? Or?
I have a... Go ahead.
I was going to say they're hackable, so it's limited on what you can browse, but it's very easy to hack and browse to the dirty sites and dirty movies onto it. Yeah,
I did notice a couple hacks and cracks on the net there.
Nothing will prevent a 12-year-old boy from getting to the...
getting to the porn? Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Great.
I do not know what it is, but I know it's not... I'm pretty sure it's not...
It's not IE.
It's not IE, but I don't know what it is. There are about a zillion... I know we only know of two, but there are about a zillion web browsers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'd rather use AOL Explorer than Internet Explorer. I mean,
well, that's pretty much the same thing, I got to be honest with you.
It is kind of close, but it's totally different.
That was the irony for a while, is that AOL was using IE as their web browser, even though Netscape bought AOL, or AOL bought Netscape.
Mm-hmm. Whichever way.
So, yeah, so they had this contract to use IE, but they owned Netscape, so it was very strange.
Right.
Hey, Nick?
Yeah?
One more question. I'm looking into getting maybe into some computer courses and whatnot. I know you guys got a website. Is there any way that you could post some information in regards to that, like some schooling or whatnot, courses?
Well, the easiest, because they change so very often, the easiest thing to do is to make contact with some of the, they used to call them adult education. Now that's
continuing ed.
Now it's continuing ed or evening education.
Okay.
At any of the outlying schools. Now, the city school as well as all the town schools, you know, like Gates, Chilai, and like that stuff. Also,
Jewish
Community Center has them. Lots of places have them. So probably your best bet. Or pick up a Computer Link magazine. I know they used to be listed there.
Now, what about MCC or RIT or any of those?
MCC has a bunch of courses. RIT doesn't have a lot of adult evening stuff, but the stuff they have is great.
Okay. I could also suggest Rochester Info Courses.
Okay.
That's the name of the company. They have seminars. Usually it's just one afternoon or possibly a Saturday. I'm sorry, what I meant to say was one evening or a Saturday afternoon if you just want an intro into something or
Excellent.
Just to check something out quickly, see if you want to pursue it further. Yeah, Rochester Info Courses.
Has stuff, I carry stuff too from time to time on different things that are going on during the week and that type of stuff as far as computer events.
What was the reference, Dave? I didn't
know. The business section of the paper will quite often tell, you know, what's going on, say different courses that are coming up and that you might want to check out.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you guys very much. You guys do a great job. Love the show.
Thank
keep
you so much.
Keep stretching for a daily show if you can.
We will. Keep writing in. Everybody write in. Our next call, I don't know when we would do it, but it would be a nice idea.
Let's see. Clear Channel is on XM, so we could do XM.
Yeah, there you go. We're ready. All Soundbites, all the Soundbites channel. I'm ready. Our next caller is Karen from Bristol, New York. Welcome, Karen. What's your question?
Good afternoon, guys.
Thank you.
My daughter was home from college during Thanksgiving break, and I was having her download the programs for the Security Tango.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ashamed to say we were watching a movie while she was doing it, and she downloaded Spywarebot. Now, we did get the Tango done, and Spybot picked up on the programs, but it says she cannot remove the entries in the registry because she's not the administrator, and
right.
she is.
Yeah, but
what do I do?
You may have to boot into safe mode in order,
okay,
and then run Spybot in safe mode.
Or another one to try, Karen, is do a Google search and go look for Super Anti Spyware.
Okay.
Download
also
that
on
one.
Our link list.
Yep, and run that one.
Okay.
Yeah, see, there's a bunch of them that are like that. There's spyware bot, and that's bad. Spy bot is good.
Yep.
Adware alert is bad. Mm-hmm. Adaware is good.
Yeah.
That'd be clever.
It gets confusing, and, you know, they think they're doing the right thing, but it happens.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
There's so many out there. That it's getting confusing.
That's why the links on the Tango page take you directly to the page that you need to download from.
Right.
You know, so make sure you're downloading the right program.
Right, right. Our next caller is Gene from Gates, New York. Welcome, Gene. What's your question?
Yes, I want to start off by saying I am just about computer illiterate. I only use my computer, which I've had for about a year, just to get emails and to read the internet, that type thing.
Right.
All of a sudden, all by myself, I picked up spam. I end up with anywhere from 16 to 20, 25 pages per day. How do I get rid of it? Or better still, it's one of the gentlemen. I listen to your show all the time. I don't understand it, but I listen.
Thank you.
One of the gentlemen has a business on Empire Boulevard. If you could tell me that, maybe if I brought whatever part of the computer I'm supposed to bring over, he can get rid of the spam.
Yeah, that happens to be me. I'm Dave Enright.
Wait a minute. I'm going to write this down. Dave
Enright, E-N-R-I-G-H-T.
Okay.
And it's Enright PC.
Oh, I looked under sound bites of the telephone. But
all right.
It's under Enright PC.
Yep. We're at 70 Empire Boulevard.
Which is roughly where I live.
It's up past, it's a half a mile past Dan's Crafts, headed towards Culver.
Yes, between Culver and 590.
Across from St. Ambrose.
I take 590 to get out there.
Yep, and you get off at Empire Boulevard.
Yeah.
And see, you're coming from where?
Gates.
Head west on Empire Boulevard.
West.
I'm going
left.
East. Yep. You're going to go left underneath the bridge.
You're going to pass it to get to 590 and then turn left on Empire to go back up the hill a little bit.
And it would be on the north or south side?
It's on the north side.
North.
Yeah, you'll see Dan's Crafts.
I have no idea.
It's a big craft store right near 590, and you just go up past that, and we're right up there.
Okay,
but a deeper problem is you cannot get rid of spam.
You can't.
You can run a spam filter in your email program that can minimize the amount of spam you'll see.
Well, this
the
is where I would turn around and recommend Thunderbird for.
Right, Thunderbird, what email program are you using?
I don't know.
What icon do you click on to get your email?
Oh, I got AOL. Is that what you mean?
Okay, AOL has its own spam filters in place. The big danger, not the danger, the issue is how do you define spam, and it's a very nebulous definition.
Yeah.
You can run a spam filter that will filter out more of the spam, but then there's a bigger danger that good messages will get flagged as spam also.
Well, that's what happens now.
The only thing you can do is change your email address and wait for it to start again.
Here's the problem, Gene. Mm-hmm. What's happened is you didn't do anything.
Right.
It's possible that someone you know picked up a virus.
And sent it to me?
No, that virus is designed to send out spam.
Oh.
It picks a random name from that person's address book and starts sending out spam. And you're one of the people in the address book. So until you get your friends to clean their machines, the spam won't stop. All right, we have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, Nick Francesco, and you. 21 minutes after the hour, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
We got it together, didn't we?
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
I thought that wasn't us because I didn't see the timer going. I should have realized the timer stopped because it is us.
Exactly. Oops. In a dramatic demonstration of the privacy dangers of databases that collect consumer habits, my name is Nick Francesco. Two researchers from the University of Texas at Austin have shown that a handful of movie ratings can identify a person as easily as a social security number. The researchers, both from the Department of Computer Sciences at the University of Texas at Austin, claim to have identified two people out of the nearly 500,000 anonymized users whose film ratings were released by online rental company Netflix last year. The company published a large database as part of its $1 million Netflix prize, a challenge to the world's researchers to improve the rental firm's movie recommendation engine. Releasing the data and just removing the names does nothing for privacy. If you know their name and a few records, then you can identify that person in other private databases. While Netflix data set did not include names, instead using an anonymous identifier for each user, the collection of movie ratings combined with a public database of ratings is enough to identify the people. The researchers demonstrated the danger by using public reviews published by a few dozen people in the Internet Movie Database to identify movie ratings of two of the users in Netflix data. So if you're one of those people who likes to go around putting in information about movies that you like, that can They can triangulate you through that as they can through any one of 100 million other ways. That's pretty tough. And in privacy and intelligence circles, this concept has been understood for decades. But the University of Texas paper visually demonstrates the dangers, according to Bruce Schneier, founder and chief technology officer of the managed security provider BT Counterpane. Very smart guy, puts out a great blog, terrific guy. If you're interested in security, he's your guy. He's pretty much your guy. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Barb from North Chi-Line, New York. Welcome, Barb. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I have an iMac, and I use AOL through Time Warner. Lately, when I get online and go to a, I'll call it a commercial site like Sears or Dell, I get to a certain point in filling in information, and I get the rainbow beach ball, and I have to do escape and start all over again. It's gotten to the point where I just give up and use the 1-800 number. Do I call Time Warner or AOL or Apple, or do you have any idea why this is happening?
Do you know what? No one ever does. Are they using Flash? Are they using Java? Do you know what they're using at the other end? And there's probably no one you can call that will be able to help. One thing you can try is downloading Firefox and using a different browser. And if the same thing happens in a different browser, then it's the site at the other end. If another browser works okay, then it's probably something in your Safari browser.
Here's the problem, Barb. There are multiple add-on programs that a lot of people use on the web because the web itself is limited in what it can do. These products have names like Flash, Java, JavaScript. If you don't have Flash or Java installed on your machine, you can't use those sites.
Okay.
Now, what surprises me is, particularly on a Mac, normally when you go to those sites and you can't do those things,
it'll
there's something that pops up and tells you that.
Right.
Sometimes unless you have your pop-up blocker turned on, then you don't see the pop-up that you're missing something.
Right. I do get pop-ups. And I do have Flash, but maybe I don't have the latest
Java
version.
Well, they just released Flash 9, okay. So it's probably not requiring Flash 9, but it may be Flash 8 that it needs. But filling out forms, that's usually just raw HTML, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you can never tell.
Well, there's often a lot of JavaScript.
Yeah. You can try in your Safari preferences, and depending on which version of Safari you're running, it's either in the preferences or in the menus. You can empty the cache, you can clear your history, and then there's even a reset Safari command that deletes everything, all your cookies and cache and history and settings, and takes it back to as it just started to see if maybe it's a corrupt cache or a corrupt cookie that's preventing that form from working.
But won't that reset Safari get rid of all your bookmarks?
No, it doesn't delete your bookmarks, but okay. It deletes your cookie. So the next time you log into like Amazon, it may forget that you've logged in before. But the reset command is a pretty deep reset. The clears and empties you can try before that.
But you can just reset pieces. So if you just clear the cache.
Right, clear the cache first.
Using its own button as opposed to reset.
Right.
Firefox.
Safari.
Okay, I'll try it. Thank you very much.
Good luck, Barb.
Thanks.
That's one of the problems we're having with the internet these days. HTML itself was designed with a very, very limited set of abilities in mind. And now, of course, everybody wants the feature-rich, media-rich web.
Yeah, the web 2.0.
Right.
Buzzword that there's no real definition
right,
to.
Right.
Yeah.
But the idea is everybody wants that, and that's one of the reasons that the internet is full.
I've actually been having more problems with Safari 3 now, and I've had to switch to Firefox for a lot more sites, and I'm wondering if, and basically it's probably just because it's the newest browser, so websites have worked fine with the older browser, and things changed with a newer browser. Same thing with IE6 and
new
IE7.
New browser ought to be able to do all the old stuff pretty easily.
Well, same thing happened with IE6 to IE7. IE7 didn't work with a lot of things.
So you're not comparing Apple to Microsoft?
A little bit. It's a new version, so it's sometimes you can be too new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why it's great, as Dave was saying earlier, download Firefox, download Opera, download OmniWeb, use any of the other browsers
so many
as a test.
And that's where folks get thinking that they can only have one.
Well, it's worse than that. They don't know there are others.
Yeah, that too.
That's so we're informing them. Yes, there are other browsers.
Which
there are other email
programs.
And
we tell people, try Firefox.
Yeah.
Always try Firefox.
That's the largest other browser.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller. Do we have time? Yes, we have plenty of time. Our next caller is Jeff from Webster, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Hi. I've been a PC user for years, a Windows PC user for years, and using it for work and home. And basically, for my home computer, I use applications such as Microsoft Excel, Word, and PowerPoint, and my home photos, and Microsoft Money and TurboTax and stuff like that. My question is, I'm considering switching to a Mac, and I just want to get your thoughts on that, because I've seen a lot of the literature about the Mac, where now you can run both Windows and Apple-based Microsoft Office applications and files. So, just getting your opinion about that.
Well, let me jump in before Steve starts frothing in the mouth.
Gotcha, Chris got the mic.
All right. Most of those things you can run under the Mac without any problems. Microsoft Money you can't, But all the others you can.
But Quicken,
there are also better alternatives.
Yeah, there are other programs like Quicken and Mind Your Own Business for personal finance versus Microsoft Money. Yeah, most of the common programs have Mac versions as well. And in fact, Microsoft Office came out on the Mac first before right. there was a Windows. And one of the biggest missing programs is Microsoft Access, which is a high-end database. We have FileMaker on the Mac. So
well, that's why you go with OpenOffice instead of Microsoft right. Office yep. at all.
OpenOffice doesn't have it. Yeah, has a database module now.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, it won't read Access files.
It won't read Access files, yeah. but it'll read... You can export Access as CVS and it'll read
right.
them.
And you could write a SQL Converter. Uplink for Access, and then FileMaker will read the SQL also. So there's ways to do it. But that's a very, very small niche, and for the common home business, right. Common home programs, everything runs on the Mac natively. And if you do have a Windows-specific program you need to run, you can.
Now, I have a MacBook Pro, and I run a product called Parallels. It's, about $80. And it lets me run other operating systems inside the Mac. So I can boot both Linux and Windows and run those programs inside the Macintosh.
Okay.
So for those very few times I need to use a Windows machine, I can start up Parallels with Windows, and I'm running Windows. Or I can boot up for the 99% of the time of my life I spend in Linux. I can boot up that. You have to have a lot of RAM and you have to have a fast machine, but that's most new Macs. I wouldn't do it with less than 2 gig of RAM.
Okay.
In the machine, and more is better. I wouldn't do it with less than a 1.8 gigahertz processor, and more is better. But it'll run, and it runs well. I actually do the same thing for my Linux box. Of course, I can't run a Mac, but there are VMware on here, and I can actually boot up a Windows machine inside my Linux box. It's called virtual machines. Those are called virtual machines, and Parallel runs them very well. So you would have the best of both worlds.
When you get the iMac.
But again, make sure it has a minimum of 2 gig of RAM, and make sure it's a minimum of 1.8 gigahertz.
Yeah, 1 gig for each operating system.
Right, and then you end up with 1 gig for each operating system. Nice. And, of course, when you really want to use the Mac full power, you can shut down the virtual machine right. that's running Windows.
And the Macintosh comes with, or depending on which, the Leopard is the current operating system, comes
right.
with Boot Camp that allows you to reboot into Windows only, so you don't need to buy Parallels. Parallels is more convenient because you can run Windows inside the Mac with Apple's free boot camp. You reboot a typical dual boot system like you've been used to under Windows.
Okay.
I myself made the switch almost 2 years ago. And
to Apple? To Mac?
Yes, to the iMac. And I have no reason to look back. You don't have to sacrifice a lot of your computing power to all the software that makes or that keeps all the malware at bay. The other thing is Apple makes the hardware and the operating system, and a lot of the applications. So you can call 1-800 number and get help on whatever your problem is. And I especially recommend the AppleCare for that, because as a new user, you'll get that telephone support for 3 years along with the extended warranty.
Okay. Great.
And really, you know, I use all three operating systems every single day, and none of them takes a backseat to any of the, well, Windows. But neither... Neither the Mac nor Linux take a backseat to Windows. That's a definite fact. And, you know, the old joke, to paraphrase Groucho Marx, except for the improvement, you'll never notice the difference.
Right. And all that having been said, I want to point out the Mac system is not perfect. It still has a few problems, but the experience is highly satisfactory.
Yeah.
Okay,
in general, the big problem most Windows users have in running a Mac is there's only one button on the mouse.
Not anymore. They added a two-button mouse 2 years ago.
Well, but depending on which version you buy,
yeah.
it just takes a little time to get used
right.
to. If you've got a notebook with a keypad, you don't get a side scroll. You have to use two fingers to scroll up and
right.
down
it's
the screen.
Different. I like your analogy about getting a car. It's like getting a new car. It still drives down the road. You can still listen to the music, but the buttons are in a different
place.
Yeah,
you just don't know where the radio is for the first couple weeks.
Yeah.
And that frustrates people, because for 3 years they've had this muscle memory of where things are on a PC, and now they have to start looking for stuff on a Mac. Now, that only lasts a few weeks.
And I almost hate to say it, but the same thing is true with Windows.
Yes.
When you upgrade to a new version of Windows, you're upgrading from XP to Vista, everything's moved. Everything's in a different place.
So you're
going to have to learn something new anyway, you might as well go with a Mac for the better experience.
Right. And I like the Mac very much. I prefer Linux. That's my personal preference. It's a whole lot cheaper than everything else out there. But the Mac is a terrific product. And if I were to switch from a PC to either a Mac or Linux, I wouldn't hesitate.
Yep.
So, all right.
As you mentioned, the one neat advantage of the Mac is you can run all your Unix programs, you can run all your Mac programs, you can run all your Windows programs on one computer.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. ISPs could face tougher penalties for failing to report child pornography under a bill passed Wednesday by the House. But don't start searching the skies for the black helicopters just yet. The bill doesn't require any active surveillance of user behavior, and it won't affect your local coffee shop's Wi-Fi, despite what you may have read. The Securing Adolescents from Exploitation Online Act of 2007, called the SAFE Act, I don't know where the O went, cleared the House yesterday on a lopsided vote of 409-2. Congressman Ron Paul and Paul Brown were the only voices of opposition. ISPs already have a duty to notify authorities if they stumble across anything that appears to be child pornography or molestation evidence. The new bills up the penalties for not doing so. ISPs will now face up to $150,000 for a first violation and up to $300,000 for subsequent violation. The bill also retains ISPs to retain copies of all information filed in these reports and to do so for 180 days in case they're needed for use as evidence in court. Now, what the bill does not do, it explicitly tells ISPs that they do not need to monitor any user, subscriber, or customer. They do not need to monitor the content of any indication or even affirmatively seek facts or circumstances. In other words, if you see it, you're legally obligated to report it, but you don't have to look for it.
Don't look, but do tell.
Exactly. And the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children praised the bill, calling it a step toward better reporting and investigation and prosecution of those who use the internet to distribute images of illegal child pornography. So what that really says is, if you are an internet service provider, and now this does not seem to cover you in your home, if you have open Wi-Fi, you're still liable. But the internet service provider, if they see it, they have to report it, but they no longer have to actively search for it. And for people like AOL, who have 100 billion messages an hour, that was an impossibility. It just simply could not have happened.
Just as a tip, if you're bringing your computer in for service and you have legal adult pornography on it, take it off the screensaver, take it off the wallpaper, take the disks out of the drive.
Yeah,
we don't want to see that.
Well, if you have illegal, if you have kiddie porn on your computer,
I'm going to blow you in.
Well, and you have to. Well, first, you want to.
I've
and secondly,
it,
legally, you have to or your partner in it.
Yes, they could come back on you. And so, I mean, I've already done it four times.
And
I've had machines show up with, you know, the desktop picture and they left the adult DVD in the optical drive.
That's fine. Adult porn.
I do want to see it, but I don't want to see.
Right.
I know. And, you know, it's like, but if you got child porn and I don't go looking for it, but oh, the worst thing a client can ever tell me to do, I had one do it. Brings your machine in and says, I got a lot of photos on it. Don't look at them. Wait a minute.
Yeah, right.
That's the worst thing you can...
But do they ask you to recover the deleted ones, but don't look at the other ones?
Yeah, right.
Don't come in and say, hey, don't look at my photos, because that's the first thing I'm going to do.
Red flag.
Yeah, right. Hello? What are you trying to hide? I mean, hello, if I'm working on your machine, and I sit there and see a folder, and I had, this is one that I turned in, XXX kitty porn. Was the label of a folder on a guy's machine, and I wound up turning them in.
Well, yeah.
And how dumb can you be?
I don't go looking for it, but if I do find child porn, you're not getting your machine back. You will get a visit from the sheriff's department, is all I can say.
Yeah,
and I've done it four times, and I'm darn proud of it. And, you know, anybody else that thinks that, oh, well, they're entitled, wrong. Right. That's a child's life that you're messing around with.
That's right.
Oh, that, you want to talk about hot buttons. That really...
I'm with you on that one. I'm 100% with you on that one. That's the worst thing you can do.
Yes.
Nick, could you get back to explain how this affects us with Wi-Fi at home?
Yes. If, for example, somebody does track, let's say a guy sits in your driveway and you have open Wi-Fi.
Or in front of your house or in the next apartment.
Just wherever. Yeah. And they are on your Wi-Fi and they download kiddie porn and somebody's tracking that. It's going to end at your router. You now will have the legal obligation of proving you did not download kiddie porn.
You're legally obligated to prove a negative.
Well, if they come to you and say...
Yeah, the cops are going to show up at your door and arrest you.
The cops are going to show up at your door and say, we're confiscating everything you have.
Right.
At some point, they may discover that you did not download kiddie porn. You've still lost your machine for a year.
Right.
At least.
And all your stuff for a year.
And all
your name's in the paper as a kiddie porn person and everything
else. Guilty until proven innocent.
And how do we prevent that?
All you have to do is lock down your Wi-Fi.
Put an encrypted password on your Wi-Fi router. Virtually every Wi-Fi router walks you through the setup assistant now to turn on encrypted passwords. Yes, it's annoying to have to remember the password, but
you only type it in once and it'll remember it.
Well, so now see, you type it in once and your computer remembers it for you, but then it's harder for you to remember it when you need it.
Here's what you do, and I've said this for 100 years. You write all your passwords down on a sheet of paper, you seal them in an envelope, and you lock them in your fireproof safe.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever need them, you have them. But most people, A, won't know they're there, and B, can't get at them.
Yeah.
And if they do, if you go look at the envelope and it's opened, you know, seal it, write your name across the back, whatever. If it's been opened, change all your passwords. Mm-hmm. Duh. All right, we're going to take a... This is just the way it sounds in my head all day long. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 49 minutes after the hour, soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 53 minutes after the hour, it's soundbites. Our next caller is Don from Bergen, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
I'm the Genesee County President of Technophobes of America.
Congratulations. Good to have you call in, Mr. President.
Thank you. I have a couple of Mac questions. I heard you guys talking earlier.
Sure.
Number one, I have a printer that committed suicide. It grabbed the entire bunch of paper that I had in there and just blew into a million pieces.
Yeah.
So I got a new printer, very inexpensive. I thought it'd be a no-brainer. Turns out I need Mac OS 10.0, and the only way to get that on my machine is with a DVD, which my machine does not have. I have a 9.1, OS 9.1.
Yeah, OS 9 died 6-7 years ago, and companies stopped supporting it 5-6 years ago.
Is there any way I can make a printer accept it, or
no?
Or vice versa?
No. You have to buy a printer with OS 10 drivers, and no one's making them anymore.
OS 9 drivers.
I'm sorry, yeah, OS 9 drivers.
Okay.
You may be able to find one on the used market that still supports. In fact, I think I have one at our office. We still have an old Epson 740 that will run in OS 9.
Okay.
So it's like buying a new printer for Windows 3. No one's going to make drivers for it.
Right. I wonder if I can ask you one more brief question, please. I have a flight simulator that I really, really like. It's called X-Plane, and it doesn't run on my Mac. It used to run perfectly, and all of a sudden I get this message, speech lib file cannot be found.
What can't be found?
Speech lib speech file.
Part of the speech library. You may need to reinstall the speech library.
Okay, and that's found on the original disk that came with the machine?
Yeah, it should be. It's part of the original operating system.
Yeah.
You can turn off the speech control so you don't have to speak to it, and that might let the program run.
I like that.
Yep. I'm not sure whether that's speaking controls in or having it speak controls out to you. It's all part of the speech library. But yeah, so it sounds like it might have a corrupted file and need to reload that. So it kind of sounds like time for a new machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. If your machine is that old, it may be time to move on. But a lot of people can't these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's the way that works.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Don. Our next caller is Keith from Batavia, New York. Welcome, Keith. What's your question?
I got a question about GPSs. My son recently moved out to Denver. He's an air traffic controller.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a new space, obviously. So we wanted for Christmas to get him a GPS. Interestingly enough, last night we had to go to a party in Leroy on Elm Street. And so I went in and I went to MapQuest and I typed the address in because I wasn't sure where it was.
Mm-hmm.
And Leroy didn't exist. So when I put in the zip code...
Well, maybe it was under Leroy.
Stop it.
I didn't capitalize the R. All right. But I put the zip code in and then it showed. But it still didn't see Elm Street. And so we went there, and Elm Street seems to be around a long time because it's got 1930s and 1940s houses on it.
Right.
So then I went into Google Earth, and I said, okay, this is possibly satellite, and this may be completely apples and oranges, GPS in what I'm talking about. But with Google Earth, I just typed it in about an hour ago, the same thing. Without the zip code, it went to someplace downstate as far as Leroy. When I put the zip code in, it went to Leroy, but Elm Street, again, didn't exist. Is this a problem that exists with GPS, or are these totally different systems?
Well, with my GPS, I've got a Garmin 350, and I mean, you know, usually ask you what town you're going to.
Yeah, it's a general issue with mapping software that the GPS has to get its map from somewhere, and whether the company makes its own maps or buys a map from somebody, the map is only as good as the cartographer that made it. And in many cases, we've been hearing, in fact, there was this little town in Britain, I think it was, that wants itself removed from all the GPS maps because it's like a shortcut between two major highways, but it's really narrow, winding roads, and they're seeing tons of semis getting stuck on their roads.
Right.
Because when you type it into the GPS, this shows up as the best path.
Right.
Yeah.
So GPSs are not perfect. They can find a lot of places. I have a friend who lives at the butt end of Canandaigua Lake in the middle of nowhere. You have to go off the road onto a dirt road. When that ends, you're near their place.
And
it finds him, but that's simply because that part of the world happens to be mapped. If Leroy hasn't been mapped yet.
And I just tried Leroy in MapQuest and it found it, but it spelled it as two words instead of one word.
Try that.
Yeah.
See if that's it. Maybe it thinks it's two words. We're done. We're done for another week. Look at that. I want to thank everybody who called in. I apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Please call earlier next week. We tend to get a lot of calls toward the end of the show, but it's a little late to get to all of them by then. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who continues week after week for no discernible reason to come in here and give us his time, his talent, his abilities, his hardware.
It's donuts.
He likes the donuts. That's a good thing to record the show for podcasting. I want to thank Rob Linton, who has just we love you, Rob. Don't touch the buttons now for another 30 seconds or so. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll see you next week, 59 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.